Hello, my name's Sylvester McCoy, Doctor Who number 7. You are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Yes, that's what. There's something wrong with the speaker. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 427 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've girded all the loins that we can gird and are preparing our petard to be emotionally hoisted upon. In other words, this is going to hurt like hell. I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
And I'm Haley. And this week we take a milestone leap forward in our Torchwood rewatch as we head into the third season of the program, the five-episode story, Children of Earth. None of us have watched this in a number of years, and for a number of reasons, not least of which is the fact that it was difficult to watch the first time. So, us being us, we're doing it again.
So, the season plays out over a series of 5 days, each day given its own episode. Day one was written by Russell T. Davies himself, and gives us a look at what remains of our Torchwood team after the loss of both Tosh and Owen at the close of series two.
Gwen, Jack, and Yanto seem to be carefully stepping back into the pattern of their work, but something appears to be happening around Cardiff, or perhaps the UK, or rather the whole world, with children.
Yeah. Government agencies, including Parliament and UNIT, are carefully treading into the mystery, but when Torchwood are involved, red flags, quite literally, are going up. Someone really doesn't want them involved.
And when we hear about the fact that something of this nature has happened before, something involving a frequency allocation 456, the story gets even more dangerous, specifically for Jack, who has been put in the proverbial crosshairs.
What's it like inside Torchwood? I mean, what do you do?
Why are you so interested?
The thing is, we've all seen it now, the past few years. Alien life, even though half the world's still denying it.
Sasha, love, come on, look, I haven't got time, I've got to be in work.
Jack, get up here right now! It's happening again! The children!
They're doing it again!
We have been bracing ourselves for this for a little while, ever since you, the listeners, thank you all. And I say that with honest thanks, genuinely thank you all. Not like a, oh, thank you very much.
Even I genuinely thank you for urging me to continue the rewatch of Torchwood.
Right. But we had all said along that the emotional impact of this particular season was more clear and sort of indelible in our memory than the specifics of what each episode installment contained. So after going back to watch day one again, I want to ask how new to you did this feel? Because like we think about it big picture, start to finish, this was the big fat story. Now we're getting back into the minutiae. So how new did it feel? Jay, Haley, Julie?
There was a lot of stuff I had forgotten the details on. And I think my main feeling was like, there was a lot in this episode that I did not remember coming this early. Like it was a lot crammed in there. And I was just like, oh, that's, I thought this came later on, or I forgot about that part entirely. But yeah, there was a lot here to unpack.
Right. Characters too.
Yeah.
I mean, there were entire character appearances I thought either I wasn't really expecting them until far later in the story, or ones where I didn't even know he or she was in this for the time they were. Yeah.
I forgot about Dr. Redshirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Agent Redshirt. Yeah.
I admit that I didn't remember a single thing except for the fact that Capaldi was in it. Mm-hmm. And I recognize faces. I'm a very visual person, so I recognized, I was like, oh, I've seen them before. Mm-hmm. Probably in this. That's all I got.
The biggest thing that I didn't remember, like I remember there was like a big kind of government cover-up conspiracy part that kind of carries through the whole story. But the details of that are the thing that I remember the least about. I just remember that it's there, and I don't remember any of the parts of it.
As a viewer, Haley, does that sort of, because I know we all obviously watch a lot of science fiction, but we also watch a lot of sort of more intricate fiction stories that have to do with sort of, you know, long tail storylines and story arcs and things like that. Do these ones that have the sort of the conspiracy theory or the ones where there's government cover up or black ops kind of stuff, is that within your wheelhouse? Is that something that you generally like to kind of gravitate towards? Because I know being like, you know, Marvel and that whole thing, is that your jam?
So I will preface this by saying I'm the only person on the podcast without kids, but season 3 of Torchwood is my favorite Torchwood. Like, I know a lot of people don't enjoy rewatching it, but it is my kind of story.
I'm not going to disagree. In fact, I have down on my notes sort of, well, I had it mentally and I actually wrote it down because I just can't get away from it. This is exceptional storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, you take little 2-minute chunks of this, and you can divvy up the episode however you want, and you just grab, you know, a 2-minute timestamp out of it, and you've got jam-packed stuff going on. There's nothing wasted in here. Even if it's stuff that's being done for sort of lighthearted, you know, don't we love these characters kind of thing effect.
Or like the brash brother-in-law coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, there's something there. It's all heavy. Mm-hmm. If you are paying attention to the interaction between characters or the story building, it all means something.
We don't have anything where it's like, oh, we need to give Owen a line for the episode.
No, when we watch, when we do the Doctor Who rewatches, one of our favorite things to say is like, this is good, you know, folding laundry, Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. If you were going to try and do laundry while you're watching this, just looking for that one loose sock, you're going to miss 2 or 3 things.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. And you mentioned things like, all right, so our main characters, those endearing moments. I can't recall exactly chronologically how long of a gap there was between the finale airing of season 2 and the start of Torchwood Day 1. I want to say it was more than a single calendar year, but I'm not entirely certain. I'll let somebody look that up really quickly for me while I'm kind of vamping here for a sec. But this is one where those moments, the ones where we get to be reminded of how the team is doing, the remaining members of the team.
I mean, you got 3 people, it's more than 2, it's a team. It's a
right, team. But yeah. you get to see the interaction between all 3 points on that triangle.
Yeah.
And it is, and I don't mean this in the classic playwriting sense, this is a love triangle that is fascinating to watch, these 3 in particular, because they share very particular bonds on all 3 vertices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? 15 months, by the way.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense, too, both in John Barrowman's hair and love.
But back to these characters, I always felt like when you go back and watch season 1 and season 2 of Torchwood, you kind of have the love triangle doing like being a unit, and then Owen and Tosh kind of being a unit, but those 2 pieces don't necessarily work together in every story very well.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, and I think that their relationships have become predictable in a way where Gwen walks in and says, "Oh, are you 2 doing the thing?"
All right. Right? She walks in, the lights are off.
Yeah.
Are there things I need to know before I come walking around this corner?
Yeah. But also, they were out on business, but they didn't leave a note. So they're kind of casual around the office now, but also still doing the job, making sure that they're getting stuff done and reviewing cases and things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that actually leads to a question that I wanted to throw around the table here. Have your opinions of our main characters changed at all over the course of these two and now two and change seasons that we've been watching. As far as when someone steps into a scene, are your expectations different? Are you sort of seeing them through a different lens?
Yanto, definitely, because when he was introduced, so all of Torchwood was out when I first watched it, like the first three seasons. So I watched it all at once. And when Yanto's character is introduced in season one, I was like, oh, this is like the coffee guy receptionist. That's his role. Mm-hmm. That's all he's ever going to be. He's going to be like comedic relief every once in a while, coming in, bringing pizzas, whatever. And then you get to where we are now, and he's part of the team. He's in the field, and where he goes from here, like, that's a huge arc for him.
But he hasn't lost himself in it. He's still very much Yanto. He's still the one that if he could have his way, everybody would just calm down, have a cup.
Right.
Be a little snarky and continue on their day. Meanwhile, Jack still has all of the same huge secrets. Mm-hmm. Dad.
Yeah. We're going to get to that in a second. Yeah.
I like, that's a huge piece. We've been through two seasons with this character, and now we're learning direct, immediate family, still alive.
And we also get a good and valid reason for why we are just now finding out, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, let's jump to that at the moment, since it's all top of mind.
I was going to say, before we...
One more thing?
Just before we move on, I feel like Gwen and Rhys are just solid. Same exact portrayal, exactly where I think they should be by now. Buying a house. It's good. Perfect.
Exactly. And I swear I would send Kai Owen on house hunting for me any day. He looks at the outside and goes, I'm going to knock 10,000 off it. Just look at the outside. That's all I want.
Fantastic.
But also still, like, he's looking for a place where they can put in a nursery. She's got jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That says quite a bit. Well, that we're going to get to that too.
Right. Like, he's got the hope. Just a little bit of hope. Like, not too much, but just a little bit of hope.
Just want to float it out there.
Just throwing it right back. Okay, just saying.
Back in your catalog there. So the aspect of Jack and that revelation of about having a conversation with this mystery woman and mystery child of hers for a solid 6 or 7 minutes of screen time before she turns to him and says, Dad. Mm-hmm. And it's just done so, it just rolls out and it doesn't give you, intentionally does not give you time to react. Yeah. You just have to process it and run with it fast because there's still stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that effective? Or do you consider that something where you really wish you had more time to chew on that?
I'm glad they didn't let it hang. I feel like season one of Torchwood, they would have. You would have had 15 seconds of silence there to bask in that word. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, you got to keep up because we're going places.
So you think RTD's learning about his characters? He's learning the now that he's created these things and put them out into the world?
Or they just had to cut it for time? I mean, no, I think that they, on purpose, I agree with Haley. I think that there's just enough time to take it in, but then they kind of soften it a little bit with the joke of, well, I found a gray hair and you were there at mom's funeral, you'll be there at mine. How am I supposed to explain that to him? 10 times
more poignant right now, by the way, with the gray hair comment, if when you see John between dye jobs.
Right, because he's totally
whammo.
All white and then normal hair, yeah.
Which, I don't know if you guys remember the first time you watched this. I think I remember thinking that, like, the kid was his child with her. This is some old flame.
Right.
And then they throw you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's, and you get kind of a bunch of things all at once because I had the same thought. And then, you know, the kid comes up and Uncle Jack, I'm like, oh, well, they're not siblings, but so maybe it is still the thing, but it seems like there's a different dynamic there. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, Dad comes out, and I do think that it was an intentional thing to just drop it and keep moving because, like we said, every minute of this series is jam-packed. You don't have time to figure that stuff out. It's like, you got the important part. They're related. Moving on. Sort it out later.
We did get previously, though, that he had had a relationship back in the day, that he was married. Mm-hmm. There was no mention of a child or children from that marriage, though. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that I don't remember back when I watched this for the first time, however many years ago. But now, since we've watched that more recently, I do. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I was caught off guard that this was his daughter. Because of the age gap and where we sort of placed him previously with those old photos. So I think that kind of felt like more in stride since I was watching it more close together.
True.
Because I think last time I did wait to watch COE at the recommendation of people who I worked with that were like, no, give yourself some time and watch this in a...
Let me put that out there because that's something that we didn't really address before. We've had a couple of folks who have reached out to us saying that they were getting to it. Either they had stopped after season two or had been sort of called off season three for one reason or another. Well, not for one reason, for obvious reasons. People saying, no, this is just too intense. You're not going to be able to... Just don't do it. Mm-hmm. Which I get. But for those of you who are stepping through this installment by installment with us, bless you, because I think that's really, this is one of those few instances where binge mentality would work against you. This is something that really requires, and it, maybe right now, even off this first episode, you think, well, I don't know, it's just a bunch of stuff, just all gets teed up. I want to see where it goes. Take a beat, because... just as we're sort of doing here and sort of break it down, this gives you a chance to kind of digest and think, well, where does this really fit into what we knew of these characters that are now being put in a situation where things are ramping up astoundingly fast? And based on RTD's writing and a editor who I'm going to credit later, as we've learned from editors, half the story is told in the editing room. This episode, well, this series doesn't waste a second. So, if that's the case, then stepping back for a second about realizing that Gwen is pregnant for realsies this time.
They're having a baby.
You can say the real word.
Pregnante?
Try one more time.
Starch masks.
No, she hasn't gotten that far yet.
Oh, she pregnant with Babe.
It's only 3 weeks, right? because she smells like it. That's, by the way, just total aside.
3 weeks? You do not know.
She do not know.
She do not know.
He
until,
do know.
Until she put her hand on the paper scanner.
Yes. She tore the lid off of a flatbed scanner and put her hand on it, and it said, pregnante?
Pregnante? But how lucky that she did, so that story plot device.
I'm telling you.
Jack could also put his hand on to say, it's okay, and then.
Right.
Anyways.
So.
And then time to exit.
That inclusion is something that moves forward some pieces that were put in place towards the latter half of season two. When Gwen and Reese are getting into the conversation of the fact that there's no way we can do the normal family dynamic with your, Gwen, job being the way it is. It's insane. It's dangerous. It's reckless. It doesn't make sense, or at least in Gwen's eyes. Reese is like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We can do anything. Look at us. I'm Superman. You're Wonder Woman thing.
I'll be a great da.
Look at me.
I'll take care of the wee bear.
So
that's not
he's getting right. Scottish.
That's not the okay. right one. Sorry.
Accents on parade here. Here you go. But I think it's a really fascinating thing that, well, A, that Jack is giddy about the fact that he knows before Reese does.
Oh, jeez.
Because he knows how mad he's going to be.
And two...
says Yanto, we're having a baby.
Okay. And thirdly, that that Jack is the one that calms her down and says, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jack may or may not have dealt with anything similar to this before. We don't know. I guess he could have had a lifetime of experiences or multiple lifetimes of experiences.
He could have had lots of babies.
Right. Oh, the little Jacklings all over the place.
We're all descendants of Jack.
But I don't know.
That scares me.
So, but this tells me that I don't know if Gwen and Reese have been able to, because between that and the nursery gag about when they're house hunting, that they have moved that conversation forward at all.
I feel like it's one of those conversations where you start the conversation and then every once in a while you go, do you think? Maybe not, maybe. We'll talk about it again in a couple of months.
I think they're still having the conversation. It's ongoing.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think Gwen's the first one to know, like, oh, this conversation now has an end.
I come there to a decision.
Yeah. This body, oh mine, has said.
All right.
Has I told you I'd have the last word about it.
Right.
And the last word is, has this show, we saw a clear evolution from season one to season two. They sort of, you know, season one was, as we were talking about, the proverbial spaghetti against a wall. Just whatever we could do, just any wild arse idea, let's try it out because we got the rights to use curse words and show more blood and
hanky panky,
right? And hanky and or panky, but not both together yet. Season two, you got hanky and panky like joined together.
There was hanky and panky in season one.
There was
the alien that was like,
yeah.
It just got better with actual storytelling in season two.
right, exactly. Oh, then they remembered plot in season two.
Oh, right.
Put that in.
Anyways.
But from a sense of tonality, as far as this idea of, you know, when we embarked on this whole dingbat adventure and said, oh, we're going to go back and rewatch Torchwood because that was Doctor Who after dark.
Lovingly started to rewatch the series is what Keir meant.
Right, when we were stupid enough to... No, but is there a... Do you feel that there is another, I know it's a little early to tell, but I'm getting the sense that there is another plate shift between two and three. They tested some things in two, just like in one, they threw a bunch of stuff out and tested it. And number two, they said, or season two, they said, all right, let's hone this. There's been another shift forward, but I can't really put my finger on exactly what that is, other than maybe just tightening it up.
That was part of it. This is also at a time where how shows were presented, I feel like, was changing a lot, where you started getting a lot more things like miniseries and getting the whole story at once as like one big story as a package. And I feel like RTD was like, ooh, I could do that. So instead of having five episodes that constitute an arc scattered in my 13 episode season, I'm just going to make those five episodes.
I also think there was something to do with, I don't remember exactly, but either budget or timing, where they had the idea for a story that, to Haley's point, would have been a 13 or 11 episode series. And they said, what if we just made it five, either for budget or for story writing, or I just don't remember the timing of it all back. So I think that having to... quote, cram everything in or squeeze it so that you've got literally the essence of what you want the story to be, to become those five episodes and become 5 days of real life. This is a crisis that is literally happening to these people in real time. It forces them to tighten everything up and make every single moment count.
I personally really align myself with real-time unfolding of plotline in any story format. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, straight drama, police procedural, whatever. Because that, I almost feel like I'm being cheated when they suddenly jump forward to the next day or 3 days later or something like that. Because I think about my ADHD brain and how quickly I'm changing things around, decisions and paths and just processing information in my head. And I think about things wildly different over the course of 6 hours, let alone 6 days. So with people whose jobs are hanging upon saving the world based on split-second decisions, I don't want to wake up and say, and the next day. No. That doesn't happen. These people aren't allowed to sleep.
Yeah.
So I absolutely agree. I think the idea of looking at this as a viable mini-series broadcast format, and I've never understood BBC drama department and how they've decided about what gets how many episodes, and the fact that they'll take a series like this and go from 13, 5, and up to this and down to this and so on. But that flexibility allows a showrunner slash primary story editor slash executive producer to be able to say, no, I've got one story I want to tell, and I don't want to be encumbered by occasionally fitting in a blowfish story or whatever, you know? I don't know.
But he was super fast racing blowfish.
Yes. Well, the first one was. The second time we saw a blowfish, he was just sitting in a cell. So.
Womp womp.
So that being said, this looks like RTD had an agenda. Right. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, it was like, I don't really have a lot of interview footage that I could find that shows Davies talking about his Torchwood experiences or creative processes as much as he seems to get asked about Doctor Who. But I'm really increasingly, my one big takeaway from this rewatch is I really want to talk to him about Torchwood now.
You can stalk him, I'm sure. We'll find a way.
I could. I'll send him cookies. I'll learn how to make Ted Lasso biscuits.
There you go.
That's a deep pull. But I want to know about whether this was something where he knew this all along that he wanted to do this, or if this was something that as he learned his characters better and what audiences were reacting to, he wanted to grab that and amplify it.
I think that's the point.
Okay.
I think that's from the little that I've read. I think that it's wrapped up in that it was condense everything, make it a 5-episode, really pull the important pieces out of it.
Hmm.
That's kind of the feeling that I got, was that like this may have been an idea that was bouncing around in his head for quite some time, but I think that it evolved along with the show. You know, it might have been something that, you know, even from when he was, you know, reviving Doctor Who, like, this would be an interesting story to tell. I just need to find the correct medium for it. And then, you know, it's like Torchwood came along. It's like, okay, no, this would be a great place for me to put this. How am I going to tell it? And then as the show went on and as the characters grew and things like that, it kind of took shape. So I think it's a mixture of both.
Mm-hmm. I think... Well, however you want to interpret it, I think we're better for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe day one is an inaccurate bellwether of how this series is going to play, you know, as we're looking in the rearview mirror. But then again, our memory sucks, so maybe it's not so bad. But it actually is.
Well, and if if you remember, so I think. That RTD writes the first, third, and fifth episode of this too.
Yeah.
So that if you're looking for any more proof of I know what I'm doing, someone else can maybe help me with 2 and 4 just to get me between the pieces and
get a little exploration, a little additional voice in there. Sure, sure. But this is, you know, I think about who comes to mind, Eric Kripke. As far as what he wanted to do with Supernatural in the first 5 seasons, right? That was his story. He knew exactly where he wanted to be from the beginning to the close of season 5, but he handed over pieces in between to allow for some breathing room.
Yeah, and some creativity and some other input so that it's not just like, this is a thing I did and here is my thing.
Right. But it allowed him to stay true to his characters throughout.
Yeah.
Same thing with BSG and a bunch of other series that sort of had that mini series mentality, as Haley was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, can we talk about some of the characters that we were introduced to in this episode? So, we've got the big players that we know are going to become big later on. Obviously, Peter Capaldi's Frobisher.
Sure.
You know, seems like a standard bureaucrat. You know, like he's.
Can I just say, seeing Peter Capaldi cleaned up in a suit in a parliamentary position and is not Malcolm Tucker is really freaking weird.
True.
He's not cursing at people. Like, he deals with stressful situations in the workplace and is not dressing them up and down with language that would make me go, oh, damn.
When I saw the short little tie in the suit, I was like, oh, and no eyebrows.
No right? eyebrows.
Like, those well have been well eyebrows. Manicured and trimmed.
I think that's actually credited. After hairstylist, eyebrow stylist.
Right? But I mean, he does a great job of, like, basically right from the moment you meet him, you understand his character. You understand what his goal is in life, how he handles things. It is brilliantly laid out very early on.
Yeah.
You know. And then we've got Lois Habiba showing up for her first day of work, and God only knows what this girl's about to get into.
But she wanted to get her name out there so everyone knows who she is.
Repeated it like 6-7 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. That very much reminded me of Harriet Jones, Prime Minister.
Yeah. I'm new here. Habiba. Right.
Here's my card.
Yeah, exactly.
If she were a temp, I would get it because she's trying to, like, you know, move from a temp job to get a full-time position.
Right.
But she's already been vetted, and I'm sure this is something where she's been trying
to. And still showed up late?
Question mark.
Maybe that's a thing that's okay. Like, public transit, us on our.
You know what I've learned is once they give you the job, it's really hard to lose a job.
Especially public servants like that. Yeah.
But then there's.
We do get to meet Yanto's sister.
So. Yeah. Well, Yanto's sister and Yanto's brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And all of Yanto's neighborhood. Can I just say that wherever the hell she's living, as charming, like I've seen housing complexes like that both here stateside and in the UK dozens over. You know, and it's just everybody knows everybody's kids. You lean out the window and say, hey, Bobby Magook, you know, you knock it off or I'll tell your father, blah, blah, blah. The fact that they can break into the Torchwood Rover.
That was sort of double parked as well. So somehow they got it out of that situation. Right.
And proceed to just lap the neighborhood with an ass sticking out the window over and over and over.
While dodging bricks.
Yeah. Poorly thrown bricks. That car is probably still looping that tenement complex.
There's no people in it anymore. It's on a track. And they just. The
car's going by itself.
That is. Yeah. That would be the studio tour I would want to see. It was a filming locations of Cardiff, and I go, and there's just a Land Rover that's just being is being robotically driven with an animatronic butt sticking out the window.
Yeah. And the doctor, who I believed in Rupesh. until that moment where he was like, nah, pew pew.
Very convincing. Well, here's the thing about that I take away from Rupesh. Is his whole idea of his sort of deer in the headlights way that he played the character throughout continued as he's shooting Jack, after he shot Jack.
As he's being shot by. Yeah.
Always, just that big expression of his never broke.
Yeah.
That's.
I mean, the like, who changed the plan? Like, even like once he's revealed, it's still what's going on?
Still trying to be the nice guy. That's a really, really interesting choice. It's a fascinating little character.
Yeah.
The fact that he doesn't know how to duck and weave when you're running down the hall, when you hear somebody who is, you know, they're drawing a bead on you, you're trying to run away from well-armed people down a corridor full of well-armed people. And I forget what was the command. I think she yells out, Johnson yells out, sight, which means give her a sight line.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't know that. He's like, well, I can see.
He's an agent.
But he's already running, so dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
Exactly. Yes. Could have taken him out with a wrench easy.
Like, there were no other doorways on that hallway. He had to make it all the way to the end.
Yeah, which one of the Stark sons couldn't zigzag? I'm going to throw a Game of Thrones reference in there.
Rickon.
Rickon. Who couldn't just duck left and right, just ran a straight line from archers. Good job.
But seriously, though, would it have made a difference? No.
Well.
I also...
They did. Dance.
Well, I feel like, didn't they do a...
Another how it should have ended kind of thing?
No, not how it should have ended. They did a one of those, like, would it have made a difference
like science? Mythbusters for
Mythbusters.
Arrows?
I feel like Mythbusters did something like that. And they said, would it have made a difference? No.
Yes, it would have. It makes it harder to aim if your target isn't going in a straight line, if you don't know where they're going to move.
But granted, Rupesh is running down a very narrow hallway.
Yeah, it's less applicable with guns, and there's also more than one person there with guns. Anyways, I'm not going to talk about Game of Thrones for the entire Torchwood podcast.
But the fact that eventually, at the end of the hallway, he's got to go through a door. You can duck left and right as much as you want, but by the time you get to that door, there's only one way through the door.
Right.
Yeah.
So, goodbye, Rupesh.
I also really liked the character that we met, Mr. Decker, down in the basement, who, you know, talking about the 4-5-6 frequency. Like,
yeah.
So, this is an actor that we've seen in Doctor Who a couple times.
Yep.
Most recently in the, was it Can You Hear Me? As the reverse Wet Willy guy.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I recognized his face. This is one of those, like, oh, I know him.
Yeah, exactly.
But is it from this or something else?
He's one of the 12 actors.
Yeah, so he knows how to play, like, squidgy bad guy very well, which I feel like he does the same here. Like, this is someone who the world is faced with this terrible thing. Everyone is freaking out about the kids, and he's down in the basement excited over the fact that this radio frequency has come up again, and what kind of trouble is this going to stir up? Like, this is going to be great.
Like, right. It's like those movies where you see the alien invasion or whatever the thing has happened, and there's one guy who's just fascinated by the tech.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but look at the guns they're using. This moves right through solid objects. Like, it doesn't matter. It's taking out our cows.
Mm-hmm. Did you see how cleanly they just took that guy's head off? That's amazing.
Self-cauterizing.
That was a people. Yes,
but it's a square gun.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, so I guess.
But to that point, though, that means that he was somehow involved the last time around and maybe, likely so, helped to come up with some of the policy, which we are then introduced to with the old man McDonald.
Clement McDonald.
Could be MAC.
Could be MAC.
Timothy, who we then find out was probably there in the beginning. That we saw at the very, very beginning of all this. So, right, like, this person has been influential in that history as, even as Frobisher says, sort of like the behind the scenes, the poop rolls down the hill. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who's supposed to take this blame. Yeah. Who are the people making those decisions? Where's the science coming from that allows those decisions to be made 50 years ago or whenever it was? So, somebody has to do that.
This episode alone flexes such strong X-Files vibes. It's insane. Like, from the opening moments of the kids back in the 1960s getting off the bus towards the abduction light is so X-Files Scully on the Bridge. And it plays through as far as the which facets of government can you really trust? How long has this been in place? What do you mean we've built entire policy structures around this? This is so Chris Carter meets RTD. I'm sure they had drinks one night. but
to have been in that room.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Those two.
Well, but what if you did this?
Just napkins and pens a flurry. It'd be insane. But this to me kind of feels like Russell being able to do the sort of storytelling that he really wants to do with these characters, given exactly the format and as Haley was referencing, the idea of the series structure for this particular season, given exactly the breadth and width to do so, he's saying, okay, this is my shot to be able to tell this really killer story. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pour 110%. This is what I consider to be better RTD than anything he had done in Doctor Who, as far as his writing. As far mm-hmm. as creative control, I think you look to the larger balloon. But as far as just taking a story, an arc, this is condensed to a perfect point. And mm-hmm. and you have every indication of it right from the jump. Like, even if somebody walked away right now and said, "Whoa, no, I don't know, this involves kids, I can't do this anymore," and they walk mm-hmm. away, but they will say as they walk away, "But that was a really goddamn good episode."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And that's the thing, is like, I can't think of anything to nitpick in this episode at all. Like, it was all very solid and very well done. And it's, I got to the end and I'm like, you know, there's those times where you're watching and you're like, I want to watch the next episode. And I had that moment before. I was like, no, I don't. But I do, but I don't.
Did, as everyone was watching, whether you were watching on streaming platforms or your own copies, did it have scenes from the next episode that, yes. that began to play? Did you watch it or did you pull the plug?
I ignored.
Yeah, we did too.
I always ignore. I don't, if it's old, whenever, I always ignore, because spoiler brain me was like, wait, trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that ruins mm-hmm. it for me. So
yeah, true. Haley, what'd you do?
I turned it off as soon as the episode ended.
Yeah.
And cried for 15.
No, no, and then no, I switched to the wedding episode. I told you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You started listening to They Might Be Giants. You
needed something I did. Happy, I needed something happy, so They Might Be Giants. Birdhouse in Your Soul just kind of picked me right back up again.
If I had time, I was thinking about putting on an episode of The Good Place. Like, I needed that.
It's either we roll right into the podcast, or I'm going to watch some Ted Lasso and just be done.
Just note, for those of you unfamiliar, Ted Lasso, short series that came out on Apple Plus, it has gotten picked up for season 2, which will drop in July. It's adorable. It involves football, proper football, like UK mm-hmm. football. But it doesn't require
soccer for you Americans.
doesn't require any knowledge about the sport. It's just good. It's Jason Sudeikis and football is life.
Football is life.
That's all you know. Anyway, back to the topic here. So yeah. So do we feel, and this applies to each and every one of you, I'm going to ask you individually, if you feel you're ready to move on to day 2, Jay, I feel based on, you know, being reminded, oh yeah, we go this far this fast and this is just day 1. Are you ready to move on to day 2?
Yeah. I mean, like I've said, this is some of the best television I think I've ever watched. And while it may hurt like a sumbitch, I can't stop. I can't stop right now. Like, it's just, I want the next one in a couple weeks.
Gotcha. Haley, you ready to move on to day 2?
So the first time I watched this, I think I watched it all in one sitting. So I'm having a hard time remembering, like, what is in each part. Mm-hmm. So there's a thing that's coming that I can't remember if it's going to be like day 2 or day 3. And then I remember how day 5 ends. And like, that's about the extent of how prepared I am for what's about to happen.
All right. So this is going to be fascinating when we get around to the next iteration. I'm saying day 2, day 3. It's just like, and the shoe hasn't dropped for Haley yet. Yes, question mark. Julie, though.
No.
Okay.
Are you ready for day 1 yet?
I'm not ready for day 1.
Day 1 was not as distressing as I was prepared to be distressed.
I cried 4 times in day 1. So how do you think, those of you who know, do you think I will handle days 2 through 5? Right. Let's just go through that. I don't think I will ever be ready for any of this, but I, not having remembered any of all of it, mm-hmm. this was easier than I thought it would be.
At the moment.
Yeah. But I cried 4 times and this was not that bad. So I know what's coming and I will cry more and it will be fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be great.
I will say that when it started out, when you see the kids just frozen in place, because I know the rest of the story, that was hard for me to get through. Like, there was a moment where I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, just knowing what was coming and what that kind of, you know, foreshadowed, it was difficult. But trying to separate myself from that and being like, no, this is next stage in a Torchwood rewatch, and just trying to, like, transition my brain to that made it easier for me. And then
I agree. Some of what I was trying to focus on to lessen the crying moments was like, oh, they had a lot of extras who were children, and they were like standing there so still.
Look, how do you get a good job they're doing being statues?
How do you get a 4 to 7 year old to stand that still with such a perfect form?
Or you get
and
to
then
one scene
start
where
they clearly they would go something like clap, everyone gets to move. So I was watching for those moments, some of the technical things to be like, okay, I could stop crying now, it'll be fine.
We realized during one of the screaming scenes, we're like, oh, we visited that shooting location. We've been in that apartment tenement complex where all those kids are standing on that playground. We've been there. Like, yeah, oh,
that makes it better. So I'm trying to, for the purpose of being able to get through podcasts about having watched the episodes, take in some of those more technical details, which does help a little bit, but I'm gonna not lie that there were tears for most of it, and I'm just gonna have to hydrate more so that I don't get dehydrated.
I have to say though, I think because for a lot of the same reasons and the same beats within the episode that sort of hit me at a very visceral level, it's not so much necessarily the kids as it is watching the parent panic reaction. That is something where, as a parent, you identify with that moment of crisis where I can't even figure out what's wrong so that I can even begin to process how to help. That helplessness is what breaks me every single time.
Yeah.
I will say I really like the fact that you got such a wide range of different reactions from parents.
Yeah.
You saw a different parent. Like, it's like, oh my God, you're pulling one of these things again. Stop. We've got places to be.
Smack them around.
Yeah. And then you've got, like, you know, full on panic mode from some parents and others that just are oblivious to it. You know, they didn't even notice anything happened. So
Frobisher.
Yeah.
Right the first time around. Yeah. Walked right past his two frozen daughters.
Should I pull my kids out of school? Like, yeah, they were frozen for 5 to 10 minutes while you were walking around this morning. No big deal.
I was eating my toast.
Yeah. But that is a good point that I don't think I noticed last time when I watched this, because it's not from the other side of this. Now that I have a kid, I'm like, I problem solve for him and I don't even know what's wrong with him all the time. So if he just froze in the middle of doing something, I would be like, hello? And then the panic would set in and then he'd be fine again. I don't know what I would do in that situation.
No. And you'd tumble it through your head for hours afterwards.
Yeah, like, what was wrong with him? What happened?
Yeah. I mean, just, watching it fictionally, we're all sitting here kind of like, what would we do? Like, how could we get through that?
Dr. Google, why is my kid standing still for 7.5 minutes for no reason whatsoever?
I tried to shove him over and nothing happened. What is wrong?
Good child acting.
Yeah, they got some...
There you go. Focus on the good child acting.
Well, right.
Except for that kids... one kid in the background that kept blinking too much. Damn that kid.
Nah, they were good.
So a long while back, I want to say at least a year to a pandemic back, we were talking about the Time Lord Victorious project and how confusing it was, and it was going to span all these different media formats. And I said, well, here's this weird thing in here. It's mentioning that there's going to be theatrical experiences associated with this. This was just pre-pandemic, because it didn't strike me as odd that they were doing a theatrical planning in the face of a pandemic. And it evolved into this time fracture thing, which obviously got shelved for a while, and then they put it back together, and they're planning on launching it very shortly. They're in the final stages of getting some of the additional stuff to add to it to make it awesome. So there are some segments that have been filmed that will no longer be included. David Bradley's submission in there as some character work for the First Doctor will be in there, but Captain Jack Harkness from John Barrowman will not, for reasons that I'm hoping that just about everyone is aware of right now. We won't dive too deep into that discussion, other than saying that I think there's still work to be done. My personal take.
Yeah, it's upsetting, but it's understandable. If you want to know more about it, by all means, you know, go there. You can find the story plenty of places. But it kind of shows the shape of things to come, I think.
True. There will be, in this particular case, there will be some inclusions into the Time Fracture or Doctor Who Time Fracture project that I didn't know was actually going to be done. There will be actually a lot more of the previous iterations of the Doctor involved. As far as I thought, this was going to be something that was very sort of unit focused as far as the storyline, as far as what this immersive theater thing was going to be all about. But now if we're going to have everything from William Hartnell's Doctor as played by David Bradley to Second Doctor played by Michael Troughton voicing for his father.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Really awesome. Those of you familiar with some of his audio work, it is the, if it's not the spitting image, what's the audio equivalent of a spitting image? Is there?
I don't know.
Dead ringer. Dead ringer is the
yeah. Right? I'll take that for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can think of another.
I'll think about it.
But yeah, and they're preparing for initial ticket release, which is super, super cool. Just leads me to want to be able to get to international travel soon. It'd be great.
ASAP.
Yeah, I don't know how long this is going to run. just stay open long enough, please. But yeah, I'm glad to see that this thing is... This may, and I was joking about this before we started recording, this may be the one thing about the Time Lord Victorious project that I'm actually really, really interested in, because the rest of it just landed so awkward. I don't know. I'm going to hold on this next item because it's spoilery.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's strictly for Julie's benefit. But so we'll
There is a poll that the, I believe it's the Radio Times has put out about the best... Eighth Doctor audio drama.
Yeah.
They just wrapped up a poll for the Seventh Doctor, so now they're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to say out there that this poll is completely bogus, and I do not support it at all because they did not include they didn't include To the Death. So,
No,
it's just complete trash. Just forget the story. Moving on.
I did not look over the list of episodes, but I would assume Chimes of Midnight is on there.
I believe so. Let's see. Actually, I have
that was
open.
One of the, if not the first. It's a Charlie. Yeah,
as of right now, it is number one. It is 2,700, almost 2,800 votes for that one.
Yeah, that is. You talk about, because I know when we were discussing time loops and 12 monkeys and things like that. Chimes of Midnight with the Charlie Pollard story was one where you're dealing with the house that is stuck in the time loop, which was different than another one that I was thinking of where it had to do with this sort of garden party thing on a planet. But no, Chimes of Midnight is incredible. Charlie Pollard's entire timeline is insane. But yeah, there are some Lucy Miller stories in there that
Lucy Bleeding Miller.
I'll have to look over the titles because there are a few that even To the Death. I don't know.
I will admit that the only reason why To the Death is so good is because of everything that comes before it. So maybe it's valid that it's not on there, but I just got bent out of shape because, you know, I wanted to vote for it.
Hey, we all have a hill to die on.
Right. Fine. What was the, I'll have to find the first story that has him driving around in his VW Beetle.
Oh, I think that... Oh. Was that not Molly?
No.
No.
That was Lucy. That was a Lucy story.
Okay.
But yeah, his whole explanation as to how he can be inconspicuous in a car that looks like that. It was just it's classic. Yeah. So yeah.
So much of that at a time when Twitter was the system of record and I did not tweet enough the things I loved with hashtags. I'm so sad at myself.
Right. We skipped over a spoilery item, so we won't discuss it, but we will include it within the notes there for people who are curious to know what at least Den of Geek, who have a pretty good batting record of accuracy, have pulled together as their thoughts on confirmed, likely, and completely, you know, if we absolutely had our druthers kind of selections for returning adversaries for the Doctor in Series 13.
Yes. And that's as far as we will go.
Yeah. We might actually turn that into, if you don't want to read it all, maybe we'll have that conversation as we get closer to, you know, once we get word that we're in post-production before any, you know, whatever, you know, on-set photos spoil things for us and things. Because a few of those have already gone around. I've unfortunately seen a couple of photos that have tipped off a few things that I didn't want to know.
Then you're not allowed to play the game.
I'm not. I'm going to moderate. I'm just going to lob it over to y'all.
I will say that there are two on this list that they are saying are confirmed that I'm super excited about.
I don't even know if I want to play this game.
No. Julie may be off that week. At the moment where she taps out at like day three or day four of Children of Earth, that's it. I'm never coming back to this podcast.
I'm going to try real hard. Don't give me reasons to not. I can always go take naps.
Fair. Naps on naps.
But I'm going to put this to the listener, and I'm curious as to what you think the two that I'm excited about coming back are. So,
ooh,
like, if you've got guesses, I want to hear what you think that I'm getting excited about for this
which
next series.
Which two returning villains do you think Jay is most excited? Knowing everything that he gets giddy about, what are the two? If you were to boil it down to one, I think that'd be considerably easier. But
the winner is allowed to buy him a drink at the next in-person con.
That would be Galley in February just of 22. Saying.
No. The winner will get a drink bought from me. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, has to be collected in person.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. You get out a sobriety free card.
Just well. No top shelf. No.
I see. That's where I couldn't throw your money out on the table.
Captain Grey Goose. Put that back down. We're going Dubrov or nothing.
Here's my method is I was offering you up, Jay, and then you were offered up the money. So sure, this is
I assume Jay's just going to offer up. He's going to offer up the room booze. He's like, no, we got pop off back in the room. What are you going up to the bar for?
It's double distilled.
I found the one glass bottle Popov offers.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to go get a glass from the bar because I can't pour this in plastic. It'll melt it.
quality effort. If you choose to vote on this, what Jay is getting excited about, that guy.
So next week we are coming back with our classic rewatch with the Visitation.
Yeah, enough of this heartache. Let's just let's hide inside the Fifth Doctor story for a little while and pretend everything's okay. It's just Tegan getting mad and Adric being a putz. Nyssa solving problems.
This has been episode 427 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, no, I'm really going to go watch The Good Place now. I need something.
And this is Kira saying, we are drinking. We are drinking to. We are drinking to forget.
This is Julie saying, I'm going to England. Farewell forever.
And this is Haley saying, I think I want to make Julie watch Children of Earth every week.
We'll see you next week.
Allons-y.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.